From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and we're here every week on KXAM to talk about various mental health issues from a holistic perspective. Excuse my slip of the tongue there. And we all know that the truth will set you free. The question that we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? And basically, it is, how long are you willing to stay in denial and not ask yourself the right questions and not seek the proper help in order to really get down to the core of your truth about who you are, what you truly desire, what your passion really is, what your fears are of obtaining that, what the problems you have with communication, what patterns have you set up that you really have a difficult time exploring and tapping into, what repressed emotions and blocked memories are in there that really interfere with your ability to empower yourself on a greater and greater level so that your life is feeling freer and freer and that your heart is feeling more open and safer in its vulnerability. So that's what we do here on the show every week. Like I said, I am a licensed therapist. This is a live call-in show. If you have questions about today's topic, or something going on specifically in your life throughout the show, the number to call in the Phoenix area is 480-949-1310, 480-949-1310. If you're listening over the Internet and want to call in, feel free to also. It is a toll number for you anyway, and it is the same number, 480-949-1310, 1310. Now, today, I switched to afternoons, but I'm still thinking about tonight because for 2 years my show is in the evenings. This afternoon, we're going to be talking about blended families. And we've all, I mean, if you live on this planet in this country, you've heard about the Brady Bunch. You've probably seen episodes of the Brady Bunch. Maybe you live the Brady Bunch life, or the movie Cheaper by the Dozen, or so many other TV shows and movies that have come out where parents come together after a divorce or being widowed, and they have kids, and they find a new love, and they decide to get married. And how does this impact the lives of the parents, the lives of the kids, and what are the challenges that are being faced? What are maybe even the joys of what it's like all of a sudden to have a new step-parent or step-siblings or maybe half-siblings if births take place after the marriage or before the marriage? So that's what we're going to be talking about today. Now, I can relate to this, and this is a very interesting thing because most people don't think in terms of the impact a step-parent may have on adult children, because my dad, who's 82, God bless him, if you put together the 30 years he was married to my mom before their divorce, he's about to celebrate his 30th wedding anniversary with my stepmom, which means my dad is basically celebrating 60 years of marriage in his life. Now, 30 years of a marriage is a feat many people don't attain, but when you think about even in the course of two wives, doing it for 60 years, I think that's a major feat. And he married my stepmom when I was already in graduate school. Both of my brothers were already adults and out of the house. And my dad, in marrying my stepmom, Zena, took on, basically, three kids who were kids. My stepsister, Joanna, was 14 or 15 at the time that they met, because I remember going to her Sweet 16 party, being a college guy. She was really excited to have a college guy dancing with her girlfriends. And Zeno also had two young sons who at the time I think were like 6 years old and 11 years old or 7 and 11, something like that. So basically all of a sudden I found myself with very young stepbrothers and a teenage stepsister. And interestingly enough, my dad seemed so happy. I was just so thrilled with him. And, you know, he thrives in the context of relationship. My older brother had a little bit more difficult time accepting this new family. And so the point here is that we don't usually think of the adult children as being part of a blended family. But the adult children in this case and so many other cases sometimes are a bigger problem for the blended family than the children that are still under the supervision of the new step-parent and their current parent. So this is something that I think many of you have not given thought to. I know in my case, to me, it was great. The wedding was great. My stepsister and I, my stepsister is also a therapist, and she married a therapist, so we have a lot in common. My stepmom left teaching and became a clinical social worker and has a private practice. We basically could open up a family clinic and literally call it a family clinic because we're all family members ourselves operating. So what I'd like to do now is introduce my guest tonight, this afternoon, and this is a woman who, on a personal as well as professional level, is expert in blended family issues. Her name is Emily Bouchard, and she is a social worker and a life coach or relationship coach, and does actually teleclasses on her website, and she is an amazing person. I actually met her about a year ago at Income Builders International's week-long entrepreneurial conference, IBI, which was incredible in itself, but part of the wonderful aspect of it was the type of people that I met there and people a year later that I'm still in touch with. And I'm glad to say, Emily, you're one of those people I'm still in touch with. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Stuart.
Can you speak a little bit more into the phone?
Oh, yeah. Is that better?
That's much better. Thank you. Okay. Remember to do that.
Yeah, sorry.
Is there anything else I left out that you'd like the people to know about you before I get into some questions with you?
Oh, I think one thing I would just say is I absolutely resonate so much with the name of your show in terms of telling the truth faster.
Uh-huh.
And that's really the essence of what I do with blended families. And I'm just thrilled to get a chance to explore it with you and possibly with your listeners.
Well, let's start with your own experience, because I know that were you already working in this field, or when you married your current husband and took on, I believe, a stepdaughter?
Two stepdaughters.
Is this part of what, was it the life experience that became helped you become expert in this, or were you already dealing with these issues?
You know, it's really a wonderful winding path that got me here, because I actually started out studying this by living it as a child. My mother died when I was 14, and I became a stepdaughter when I was 15, and when my father remarried my stepmother. And so I learned about blended families through that experience, growing up in it, and ended up really being fascinated about what happens for families when there are life challenges, losses, unexpected things that happen, and how families deal with it. So I ended up studying child development in college and then got my master's in social work. And I've been working with people for 18 years dealing with all kinds of adversity, physical illness, foster care, adoptions. But it wasn't until I became a stepmother that my husband fell in love and suddenly found myself parenting two angry teenagers, that I got a chance to really go back and revisit what went on for me when I was a teenager, and then look at all these tools I had and look at what really worked and what didn't in step families. So it was like a living laboratory.
Wow. So you actually have this from both ends of your life, which is quite an amazing resume if you want to look at it that way. When you're dealing with the kids or the parents, you can actually speak to them from the perspective of really understanding, at least from your own experience, what it was like. Now, you heard me talk about the adult children. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to jump ahead and follow up, and let's complete with that. Am I right in thinking that a lot of people don't consider the adult children in a blended family really part of a blended family? I mean, it's like they usually, well, you're an adult, you should be able to handle this. This isn't immediately impacting you because you don't live at home.
You know, it's interesting because I get calls and I get emails from people who find me through my website, and that is exactly the kind of question they ask me. They're kind of baffled. You know, how come my husband's kids won't relate to us anymore? How come they never come to our Christmas gatherings? How come they're always avoiding us? You know, they're adults. We didn't get married until, you know, they were out of the house anyway, and they seem really baffled by it, and it's because there isn't that honoring and accepting of the fact that whenever you blend a family, whenever there's a new parent that comes in, it's going to trigger old issues and a lot of pain and loss around the fact that their parents aren't together anymore.
Mm-hmm. Or that one of the parents has died.
Yeah, but whatever reason,
brings up the grieving even more.
Exactly. And they trigger that old one that they didn't even know was still there.
I mean, in the one sense, we're talking about this inner child that we all carry around with us, and people need to be sensitive to the fact that, you know, yes, this person may be in their 20s, 30s, or 40s, or 50s even, but there is a wounded little kid inside there that needs to be honored and listened to. And the adult child also needs to realize that so that they can understand how they can best support the parent who they love.
Yeah,
and then finding love again.
Yeah, it goes on both sides. The parents, it really benefits them to be aware and to open up conversations about it. But also for adult children to have that consciousness that when they're starting to feel like resistance or anger or sadness, and they are kind of broadsided by it because they're not aware where it's coming from, that there's a good chance that something's been triggered from their childhood, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about the teens' issues. Okay, I don't mean to be cold about it. You inherited two teenagers.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't just marry my husband.
That's the key. Say that again.
I did not just marry my husband. I consciously, and I even in my vows, I let the girls know that I was choosing to step into the role of being in their lives as a stepmother.
Mm-hmm.
And that I took that very seriously, and it wasn't just about me and him.
Right, and there are a lot of adults when they go into this marriage. I have found it with my own clients and in relationships that the parent coming in to the household where there are kids, maybe they don't have kids of their own, but they're marrying into this, do not take into account of the fact that when they're making these vows and commitments, it's not just the fact that they love this other person and they're making a commitment to them, that they really are fully making a commitment to this family system.
Mm-hmm.
And to the other individuals.
Yes.
What kind of fears do they usually face? Let's talk about an adult who does not have kids of their own, but are marrying into a family.
You know, one of the biggest things I find with the families I work with is wanting so much to be approved of and to be accepted. And that fear of being rejected. It's so huge for them. And, you know, I experienced it myself. And, you know, I'm working with a couple right now. They're being very conscious and proactive. The gentleman has a teenage daughter, and his fiancée has been involved with him for over a year, and with his daughter as well, very much a part of the family, but always is the girlfriend. And so here's this teenage girl who knows this fiancé has been involved, very much a part of her whole family, the whole extended family. And her dad sits down with her and starts talking to her really seriously about the fact that the wedding's starting to get planned and thinking ahead to what it's going to look like with their new family. And this teenager shared with him for the first time that she doesn't want a new family.
Mm-hmm.
So I just got an instant message today. I have a little button on my website where my clients or people who are coming for the first time can click on it and get some advice.
Uh-huh.
And this fiancé was just devastated. You know, absolutely devastated that she was rejected by this, you know, teenager that she's been giving nothing but love and support to for the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got to be so present with her about the feelings that came up for her around it, and then helped her explore how possible is it that the reality of the fact that she's getting a new stepmom is triggering for her devastation that her parents aren't together.
Mm-hmm.
And the more she could tap into her feelings about what it was like to be rejected by this young girl, she could actually be more present to her about how she had a loss and is dealing with all those emotions.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, it was really a powerful exchange.
I would think so. And how would you talk, how would you help the teenager in that situation?
Oh,
where would you go with it for her?
Yeah, it's so exciting because they actually, that was what they were doing, scheduling the next appointment for me to work with her too. And it's about, there's two stages, and this is what I do with all the families I work with. The first is really allowing a space and a container for dealing with the emotions, whatever they are. Not being afraid of the conflict and looking at conflict as actually being the next step towards growth and intimacy in the family.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm all for embracing conflict and helping people get over their obstacles to actually enjoying conflict. And so with a teenager, what I do is I get them on what's going on for them, and I have them tell me what it is about this whole scenario that they're not happy with. And then we look at how are they contributing to it and what is life like for them when they focus on things from a negative perspective versus a positive perspective. And we just look at all the different possibilities and not necessarily having an agenda about how they should think about it, but just broadening the perspective for them.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And moving on to the young children, what do you find with the relationships? Is there a difference when you're dealing with teens as when you're dealing with young kids?
Oh, you know, every age group has their different challenges, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
What I find with younger kids is the hardest thing for them has to do with the transitioning back and forth to that each other's parents' homes. Because often when the children are younger, there's more of a visitation schedule, and parents really keep to it. When the children become teenagers, typically parents give them a lot more say as to where they're going to be and for how long. But when they're little, they're traveling back and forth. They're with mommy, and then they're with daddy, and then all of a sudden there's these new parents in those homes, and maybe if they're really little, they want to start calling their new mommy, mommy, especially if they're not spending a lot of time with the other mom.
Mm-hmm. Or daddy.
Or daddy.
Right.
And it's incredibly painful for the parent that is not the non-custodial parent, you know, the one that doesn't get to live with the child the majority of the time.
Right.
And what happens and what I do with those families is I work with how to support the child in the reality of their situation. So often the parents want to make it better. They want to fix it. They want to get the other parent to do something differently. And as you know, Stuart, it's so hopeless to go to that place.
Uh-huh.
Trying to change somebody else so that your kid can be happier. And so what I do is work with them on how to support their child in embracing the reality of their situation, telling the truth faster about what the reality is, as opposed to wishing it were different.
Right.
And then giving them some tools to be able to look at what's good about it and how they can really work with it instead of always fighting against it.
Right. And when these young kids are dealing with new siblings, say it's not just a single parent coming into a household, but you're actually blending, like with the Brady Bunch or Cheap Like a Dozen or some of the others that we see all the time, you know, it's not always comical and funny. It's often a real strain for them. You know, when you're dealing with the blending of siblings, what are the special situations that may arise with something like that that people are challenged with?
Oh, you know, it really depends on the age of the child. And, of course, every family is so unique. Oh, one of the things I just I got an email the other day from a woman who is really challenged because she has a 6-year-old and her husband has a 6-year-old. And the 2 6-year-olds have different visitation schedules. So one's in the home a lot more than the other one. And when the little one that goes to her mother's comes back, she always has a new toy or some new thing that her mother has gotten her. When the woman's little boy goes to see his father and comes home, he doesn't have new things, and all of his belongings smell like cigarette smoke, and they have to be kind of disinfected and cleaned up.
Wow.
So there's this whole dynamic in the home about how each child experiences the transitions and coming home, and then some jealousy and some real envy. And, you know, those are definite challenges that little 6-year-olds don't even know how to handle. You know, they're dealing with fairness. It doesn't seem fair. It doesn't seem right. So what did she want to do? She wanted me to tell her how to support her in getting her husband to make it so that those presents didn't come home with his daughter so that her son didn't have to feel bad. And, you know, that doesn't work. It just doesn't work to try and change what somebody else's child is experiencing so your child doesn't have to feel bad.
Right.
It does, no matter what the situation.
Right.
So what I did in that situation is I supported her on how to give her son something special that she could give him in transitioning away from his mom, because that's what she's doing. She's leaving her mom to come back home to be with her dad. And not tons and tons of presents, but some sort of transition object that didn't need to be washed. Like, it didn't have material that would absorb the smoke, so that the child could feel really good about having that toy with them at their dad's and also at his mom's. And then having a discussion and talking about how hard it is and how frustrating it can be when different kids have different life situations.
Mm-hmm.
Getting the feelings that the child has first, and then looking at what's right about the situation. And gosh, how hard it must be for, you know, little Susie to be away from her mom for so long. You get to be with me so much of your time. And how hard it must be for her to arouse the compassion in a six-year-old for what he's got that she doesn't have that's great, and how hard it must be for her. So to actually start raising children that think about other people and don't just center on what's wrong for them.
You know, you're talking about something that, I mean, I really hold very dear, and that is so many, it's an opportunity for the kid to really develop a level of compassion, like you're saying, but to be more conscious of other people's feelings and to be able to say, this is how I feel, and that an adult is actually listening to that and honoring it and not thinking they have to put a Band-Aid on it and fix it right away, but allow that child to learn that feelings are normal and healthy, even if they're bad feelings and stuff, and you will survive them, and you can move into solution at a certain part. Because how many adults do we know that that's the most difficult thing? I mean, most of the clients that I work with are adults who don't know how to feel. They think, but they don't know how to feel.
Oh, and, you know, that is one of the points, Stuart, that I do the most with the parents I work with. Whenever they're feeling triggered by something that the children are doing, you know, when their stepkids does something that just drives them crazy, I always go to that point of, oh, what a gift this child is for you. And let's go right to, I want to hear about your life when you were that child's age.
Right.
And what is it that you wish you could have said to your stepmom or your dad that you never got to say?
Mm-hmm.
And just go right there with them and really give them a chance to explore what's right in the situation for them instead of how bad it is.
Right. Emily, we're going to take a short break here now. And when we come back, I want to actually talk about parenting skills. And, again, this is a live show, so if you're out there and want to call in with a question or a comment, the number is 480-949-1310. And we're going to take a short break here. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster. And we're talking with Emily Bouchard about blended families. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. Stuart Altshuler, a licensed marriage family therapist. And today we're talking about blended families with a friend of mine who's a coach as well as a licensed social worker named Emily Bouchard. And Emily, we actually have a caller on the line named Faye. Faye, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
Thanks. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the Langley, D.C.
Okay, so you have a question or a comment for us today?
Well, yeah, listening to blended families, I have a situation that I would love to have some comment on that really absolutely torques me, and that is with my ex-husband and his wife. At Christmas time, when we get to experience Christmas every other year down in California with my daughter, I have two children, and she has now three. And my ex-husband and his wife, when they show up for Christmas, show up with such an abundance of packages that there is enough presents for one they give to one child, it'd probably be enough for 10 children, and each child would probably have 3 or 4 packages. I mean, it's such sensory overload for these children. And my children are, grandchildren are probably ages, coming up on 4 and 9 years old, so they're still at that young age. And they're just so absolutely overloaded and don't understand what's happening. And I remember the first Christmas I saw that, I had to really deal with my emotions. How did I feel about this? I felt like all I was giving was one little $25 gift, and he was probably giving each child $500 or maybe $1,000 worth of Christmas presents. Anyway, you know, I just thought I would like to talk with Emily about that and see if what she thought, how I could handle that. The way I've handled it is I just basically say, you know what, this is what your grandma's giving you.
Okay, Emily?
Well, can you hear me okay?
You need to speak more into the phone there.
Oh, okay. I changed my headset, but it doesn't sound like it's doing any better.
No, it's not, but go ahead.
Sorry. It, you know, that is such a typical problem that a lot of people face. I wanted to start out by saying you are not alone in that. And oftentimes, what do you think is his positive intent? What do you think he's trying to do with all this present?
I'm sorry, what is he trying to do?
Yeah, what do you think he's trying to accomplish with all this present?
That he's Mr. Big Shot. And that he has all this money behind him, and I know that he really doesn't. He doesn't have, I don't see any investments anyplace, and I don't know. I've always told them that they were going to have to make sure that they kept their jobs, that in order to be able to continue funding these elaborate Christmases, because what are they going to do when they can't do it? Because both of them in both their careers have lost their jobs, been out of work for long periods of time.
So, you know, how possible is it, say, that there's a lot of need to feel valued, and yet they come at it from that place of the material value?
Right.
And is that something that you value?
Is the material value?
Yeah.
No, actually, you know what I love is my granddaughter is the middle one of the three. And it's like, Grandma, is it time to put our makeup on? And that's what I had to really wrestle with the first night I saw all these gifts were coming in that he had delivered a few weeks before Christmas, and then the next morning when he showed up with his pickup truck, absolutely loaded with gifts. Again, I mean, there were already gifts there. And
what was it like when she asked you about putting the makeup on?
Oh, it's thrilling. It's I get emotional thinking about it.
Yeah, I bet. I bet, and what a gift to give to her, that time and your presence when you're there.
Right.
And, you know, what happens is you get to see what that child really values.
That the child is valuing the interaction with you.
Oh, absolutely.
What you can teach is so much more than those material things.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I live up in Canada, and the grandfather lives just an hour from where they live, and yet I've been to see more baseball games with my grandson than he's not seen any.
There you go.
Well, there you go. And you know what I would say, Wanda, or I'm sorry, Faye?
Yeah.
What I would say to that is that you're giving them a huge presence with your presence.
Did you hear that, Faye?
I did.
Yeah,
and
I did.
That
and that's
is
true.
So important, and it's the thing that I focus on the most with the families I work with.
And those kids are going to remember their interaction with you and what you taught them more than they're going to remember a particular gift that they were given materially in the course of those years.
Well, you know, that's true because I'm thinking about, I don't remember if it was the first Christmas or the one after that we participated in, and I gave my grandson a little $19, one of those beginner sets for magic, how to do magic, my oldest grandson. And so now it's the 26th of December, and I'm sitting there, and we're playing with it. And he said, you know what, Grandma? This was the best present I got out of all Christmas.
There you
and he
go.
Just got a little motorized motor scooter. So that's true. Well, thank you so much, Emily, and thank you so much for this show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for calling in. And the one thing I want to leave you with, Faye, are you still there?
I'm still here.
I would want you to explore for your how much you value your presence in the lives of the people you love.
Thank you.
Hey, I want to leave you with one last thought also. And from the, is it your ex-son-in-law that's been giving all these gifts?
No, it's my ex-husband.
Your ex-husband. You might want to, I mean, very often a lot of this is guilt motivated.
Yeah, and well, that's what I'm thinking because, we're not going into it.
Right.
If that's what it is.
You know, then it's about trying to put yourself in his place and realizing that, you know, he's doing his best with the place that he's in, which is probably very guilt-laden and not as conscious as you are, you know. And there's nothing you could do to change him but just to reframe how you're perceiving and interacting with the situation. And you're doing a great job with it from what I can hear.
Well, and you know what? That's true. I really appreciate that because he married the woman that he was having the relationship when he walked in after 17 years and said that he had found his next wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that he's, because he said, I know what I'm doing is wrong, and I know God's going to punish me, but I'm going to do it anyway, and that's where he was at. So that's a good point, and I thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. And hey, thanks for listening, and thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Faye, and I appreciated that question, and we're going to take another short break here. Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster. Welcome back to the show. I want to thank Faye for calling in and, you know, bringing up some issues that actually a lot of people can relate to. Emily, you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Sorry about all this technical stuff going on here today. There is another very important issue that I want to get to before the end of the show, and that is the parenting skills themselves and what parents bring to it. You know, very often, and one of the things I liked about some of the things I read on your website, and we're going to make sure people know where that is before the end of the show, is when I'm working with anyone, whether it has to do with parenting skills or whatever, to me, a lot of our behaviors are learned, obviously, from how we grew up and how we were raised. And very often we grew up saying, oh, when I have kids, I'm never going to do this with them, and blah, 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 right? And yet, when we actually do grow up, very often we don't realize it, but we're repeating a lot of the same patterns that our parents did with us that we didn't particularly like. So, one of the important things is to help people take a look at what were their parents like, and what are the things that they appreciated, what are the things they didn't appreciate, and how are they repeating some of maybe the negative things and maybe repeating some of the positive things that they can reinforce. But how often do you go into the family of origin with the clients that you're working with?
It's interesting because I am in the role of a coach and not a therapist when
mm-hmm.
I'm working with people. And I wanted to correct you that I had a license as a therapist in Texas, but since I've moved away, I'm in Washington State now, I did not keep my license, and I don't practice as a licensed therapist.
Okay.
So
I'm glad you corrected that.
Yeah, I want to make that clear.
Okay.
I often refer people to therapists when a therapeutic issue comes up.
Uh-huh.
What happens in the work I do is I definitely explore where they learned about parenting. And what we do is we revisit it from what were the meanings that their mind made, what were the beliefs that they developed as children about what it means to be a parent.
Right.
And how to parent and how not to parent. And where they got that. And what I do is I encourage couples to explore this with each other and to learn from each other instead of judging the other for how the other one's parenting differently. Because that's another thing that I encounter a lot. How one parent will contact me and say, they are so critical of how I parent my son, but when their son comes to visit, they do exactly the same thing with theirs, and then they're so hard on my son.
Mm-hmm.
And they really have a hard time with that. So I invite them to look at what are their thoughts and beliefs about parenting, and then what is it that they want to see happen, and develop some strategies together in a coaching environment about getting them to where they want to be.
And how do you find that? You, I mean, are they receptive to that? I know that my clients usually are astounded when they see the connections to how the things that, you know, for an outsider who's more objective, it's so obvious. But when we're in the middle of our own stuff, it's just like, you know, who would have thought it? And they're usually quite amazed. Do you find them pretty receptive to taking a look at, you know, the situations that they grew up in and how it relates to their own parenting?
I've had that experience, that people are willing to look at it, especially when they see that what they're doing is not working. You know, we just look at the results. What are the results? Are your kids doing what you want them to be doing? Are you guys happy with how your home is running?
Right.
You know, typically people don't look for me when they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we just look at, well, what's right? What's working about what you're doing? What would you like to be different? And how do you think you might be contributing to the behaviors persisting that you don't want to have there anymore?
Right. That's an excellent way to really put it, because most people end up going to a coach or to a therapist because something's not happening. The results aren't what they want it to be, but they're not able to actually put it in those terms. You know, if you're not getting the results that you really want, why not, and what needs to be changed? And basically, what would be the ideal that you would love to see this, how this, you would like to see this family operating, and how, what needs to change and what behaviors need to change and how, what do we need to do to achieve those ideal results?
Right.
Excellent. The other thing that I actually had a referral last week of a couple who are engaged, and they're actually coming in for premarital counseling. In other words, they're extremely conscious people, because not a lot of people will do this, but they're looking to identify their partnership, their ability to work together and how they communicate with one another before they actually say the I do's. They're really looking to do some preventative work. So it doesn't confuse the kids in the future, so that they're going into this with, in a sense, a united front. You find many of the people that come to you for coaching are doing this before the marriage.
Oh, do you know how many people come to me and say, oh, how I wish I'd found you, you know, a year ago or before we got married? It happens all the time, and I am so delighted when I have people find me the way you just described.
I know.
Because I'm a consciously blend. I think people, you know, they want to do it right the second time around. They want to believe that everything's going to be great this time. And by choosing to be proactive and conscious, like you said, it's admitting that they may not know how to do it. And that's hard for some people. They want to believe that, okay, I figured it all out. I know why that one went wrong. I had to do that other person. I know how to make it work this time. So
mm-hmm.
I just love it when people say, I really want to make this work, and I am not an expert. I've never blended a family before. Help me know how to do this right.
Exactly. And the humility it takes to step aside and not let your pride guide you.
Yeah.
To be able to say, I don't know, and I want to do it better this time around. Even if it's not a blended family situation, that if it's just another marriage and you're both single, you know, both divorced or widowed and just don't have kids involved, it's so important to be able to say, you know what, I don't want to repeat the same patterns.
Well, and Stuart, when I found out that 2 out of 3 second marriages fail, I became very passionate about getting this word out about how to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just a devastating number. I mean, we already have a problem with 50% of marriages failing. But if people want to take the risk and do it again, if they know that, you know, they're more likely to fail than to succeed, that is very sad.
I'm going to repeat that statistic because it shocked me when I saw it on your website. 2 out of 3 second marriages fail.
Yeah.
2 out of 3. I mean, that is an incredible number.
And what people don't realize is how much they're against the odds.
Yeah.
And they all think that they're going to be the ones that are going to make it, but there's a reason why those marriages are failing.
Mm-hmm. And part of the reason is because they're going into it without really assessing why the first one failed to begin with. You know, how much of it was them, how much of it, and to me it's not always going in to blame the ex. I mean, the ex may have been, you know, a drug addict and abusive and everything else, but there are things that the other parent or partner brought into it that allowed all that to go on or allowed them to stay in it too long, you know, and cause more damage. So it really is about getting to the place of getting out of the blaming and looking at your own personal responsibility for what you did to contribute to the failure of the marriage.
Oh, and if I could add something to that, Stuart, I know that the word responsibility is actually a trigger word for a lot of people out there.
Uh-huh.
And what I always say to people is, when I say that, what I mean is your ability to respond effectively to what's in front of you.
Good.
And
say it again.
Responsibility is simply the ability to respond effectively to what is ever in front of you.
Right. And which is not the same as placing blame.
No, and it's not obligation either.
Right. And it gets us actually into something that I said to Fay at the very end that she seemed to appreciate, the issue of guilt.
Oh, it's so funny.
How is guilt part of this destructiveness? I mean, it is for any of us individually, but when you bring it into a relationship, when you're dealing with guilt around the fact that a marriage didn't work and the kids are being affected and all this other stuff, talk to me about your perception of where guilt plays the role.
One of the things I speak into directly is naming the guilt, looking at it, finding out what the meanings are around it in terms of how people have these beliefs about how they should have behaved or how somebody else shouldn't have behaved, and then going right to the place of everyone is to blame, but nobody's at fault.
Mm-hmm.
And going to that place of absolving the fault, going to the place of personal forgiveness, and then moving forward and saying, let's look at the present situation and how can we really deal effectively with what's in front of us instead of being in the past and what should have happened differently because it happened.
Mm-hmm. And by not getting into the healing place, you're really perpetuating the very stuff that caused the breakup of the marriage and the trauma to the family and the kids to begin with.
And that's why the marriage is breakup.
And even, you know, Fay talking about these abundance of gifts coming in, the kids know what that's about. The kids are not stupid. Kids are innocent and insightful, and most parents don't give them enough credit for really knowing what's going on and what's motivating people. And some of these kids know how to use it and manipulate it. And some of them, I know that it gets them real sad that they see their parents doing stuff like this instead of spending time at the ball game, you know, filling the Christmas tree up with all these gifts. The kids know. The kids see it for what it is for the most part, don't they?
Oh, yeah. My favorite story is my granddaughter, who's not even 4 yet. Her parents have never been together, so she's always gone from one household to the other. And she was at home one day with her mom, and she was complaining because her mom wasn't letting her eat some candy she wanted.
Eat the candy?
Yeah. And so she said, at my dad's house, I can eat chocolate and candy whenever I want. And mom said, yeah, I know. And, you know, it wouldn't work for me because I love my teeth, and I love your teeth, and so I'm not willing to do that. And she looked at her and said, oh, I love my teeth, too. And, you know, it's not making the father wrong. It's not saying that he shouldn't do that or, you know, he doesn't care about you. It's, well, you know, that's the reason you don't do it here is because I love your teeth.
That's,
you know,
right.
Really simple.
And the important thing is to speak to the kids on their level.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
Young children need to be spoken to simply but honored by the fact, like I said, they know what's going on. Tell them the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, tell them the truth faster.
They'll tell the truth to you faster. I mean, this same little granddaughter, she looked at her mom, she was having a tantrum, and she looked at her mom, she said, wait, this isn't the house that I can get away with whatever I want. And, you know, her mom had to keep from laughing, but she just said, that's right. And she said, okay, and she stopped her tantrum, and she went on and took care of herself in the way that she'd known how to do it in her mom's house.
That's great.
You know what was great is her mom's come to this place, instead of being so angry at her dad for indulging her and not being a good parent the way she wants him to be, to saying, oh, how hard it must be for him to have to deal with their daughter when he's raising her like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because she sees how she throws tantrums and she whines and she's miserable. And so she has sadness for her daughter that she has to go through that too, but, you know, she also has some compassion for her daughter's dad and how hard it is for him.
Mm-hmm. And kids often, I mean, again, a lot of parents aren't aware of this, but kids often, I mean, kids need to feel safe. They need to feel a sense of security. And they feel that when there are boundaries, you know, placed, what's okay, what's not okay, when there's some kind of structure going on, as opposed to, you know, the kid whose parent is just giving them everything and letting them do anything, you know, whether it's guilt-motivated or, you know, to compensate for the trauma that the kid experiences through the divorce. kids feel safer when a parent says, I care about your teeth and I'd rather you not eat the chocolate, or no, you need to go to bed now. I don't, it doesn't matter that you can stay up till midnight at, you know, your mother or father's, but here you go to bed at 9 o'clock.
Oh, I know. It's so amazing. And kids are so resilient, and they really respond to whatever's in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to make it work for themselves.
Exactly.
You are so right, Stuart. What I talk to parents about a lot who are having trouble with setting boundaries is the idea of creating a steel box with a velvet lining so that the child can hit up against those boundaries whenever they need to, and they know that there's going to be a lot of love and nurturing in them, but that they are totally safe and that they are not going to be able to go out to a place where it's not going to be safe or not good for them.
Now, before we get to the end of the show, I actually now want you to talk about your website, your teleclasses, how people can actually reach you, get some information from you, and maybe start participating in the work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you. Well, I have a free newsletter that anybody who comes to my website can sign up for, and it's a weekly, just a page of tools or strategies, and then there's always an action step at the end to give you some ideas on how to apply it. And I find that the families respond a lot better to that than, say, going and buying a book that sits on the shelf and doesn't get read, because most blended families I know don't have the time to read. So you can go to the website. It's families, so that's a plural, families.com.
So actually, I'm going to spell that out for people. Blended, B-L-E-N-D-E-D hyphen F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S.com. Blended Families.
Yeah. And on the website, they can learn more about me and the workshops I offer, the teleclasses. There's usually a monthly teleclass. And I'm developing a six-week teleclass series to teach the skills that I have and give parents a chance to come once a week to come together as a group, learn one skill, and then apply it, then come back the next week and talk about what worked and what didn't, and make it available to people, because a lot of people want what I have but maybe can't afford the individualized coaching or can't get away to a seminar.
So talk about the individualized coaching. How does that work for people?
Oh, I really make it work for the families and what they want to craft. So it looks different for everybody I work with. It could be one phone call a month for an hour, and then a series of emails throughout the month to support them in their goals that they set for the month. That's a great way to do it if you're wanting to be proactive, like you're saying, Stuart, with the couple that was referred to you, where they come and they set goals for the month towards their wedding, towards setting intentions for their life together as a family, and then they work together on those things. Other people have a serious issue that's up, and they want more intensive coaching, so I work with them once a week. I'm working with the family right now. I'm working with the father, his two 17-year-old sons, his 19-year-old daughter, and his 21-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with them individually sometimes, and then sometimes as a group call.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all over Massachusetts and Phoenix.
And I think the important thing is that, you know, even though I've actually done a couple of shows on coaching and the difference between coaching and therapy,
mm-hmm.
and I know you alluded to that earlier, but most coaches actually do their work over the telephone,
mm-hmm.
And so you don't actually need to live in the vicinity that the coach lives in, so that people anywhere in the country can actually make use of your services.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have clients all over the country, and I have people getting my newsletter all over the world. I had a subscription the other day from Israel.
Uh-huh.
That's exciting. And what's great is that I get to support people right where they are with what's going on for them. And like that issue I said earlier about the couple that's with a teenage daughter, having an instant message come up from a client right when they're in the middle of a crisis feels so good to me, because it lets me know that they really are utilizing the coaching and want to apply the skills and the tools that I have to be different. And that's what I offer.
Mm-hmm.
Coaching for me is very proactive, and it's looking at what's right in the situation and helping people reach their goals. And I send people to the therapist when they have issues and problems in the past that they want to work through therapeutically.
Great. And you do workshops, too, but those are actually at a location and people come to the workshops.
Yeah. And then I have the teleclasses where you call it's called a bridge line.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who signs up for those classes, I send you a phone number to call, and you call at a certain time, and you can hear actually a lot of people on the call at the same time.
Great.
Yeah.
It's a very, you know, technology has become a very amazing thing. I mean, even these shows, you know, I'm in L.A., you're in where you are, and we're going out on the air in Phoenix.
I know. And one thing I wanted to say is a lot of families think that they have to do it alone, and they feel very isolated. And one of the things I'm really building is a community of blended families to let them know that they are not alone and that what they're challenged with, every blended family out there is challenged by.
Right. Emily, I want to thank you for being on the show this week. I'd like to have you back, definitely, you know, in a few weeks, possibly. If people want to reach Emily Bouchard, they can do it either at her website, blended-families.com. If you didn't write that down, you can always go to my website, tellthetruthfaster.com, and email me, or you can get a hyperlink to her site from my website, tellthetruthfaster.com. And in a few weeks, this show will be archived on there, so if there's someone who wants to listen to it, they could go and listen to it at any time. So I really want to thank Faye for calling in. It's always nice to get a caller. I know there are people out there listening, and she had the courage to actually call in and participate in the show, and I thank you, and I encourage others to do that in the future. Emily, thanks again for being on the show. And this is Stuart Altshuler. Tune in again next Saturday afternoon to Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM Phoenix. Have a good afternoon and a happy Easter and Passover.
Thank you for listening to Independent 1310 KXAM, Mesa, Phoenix.
Mr. Good.